This is Local Views of the News, third time in June, Aught 9. After weeks of hearing from the international media that the reform-minded opposition was about to be swept into power in Iran, the official state media now is reporting that President Ahmadinejad has been re-elected by a 2-to-1 margin, and the challenger's supporters are crying foul. There were no international observers allowed, no impartial media scrutiny, and the government doesn't talk about the details of counting the votes, but everyone has taken note that the results imply 40 million paper ballots were counted in just 12 hours. In Tehran, hundreds of thousands are in the streets protesting each day, and we don't know what kind of protests might be going on in other cities. They probably won't get any better results than the U.S. protesters got after W was appointed president in 2000, but the people of Iran clearly have a much better idea how to respond to an obviously rigged election. Democracy usually is practiced more vigorously by the young, and Iran has an under-30 voting majority. Ahmadinejad, of course, represents the ultra-Orthodox Muslim grip on Iran's government, which has been mostly hostile toward the U.S., so his retention of power is no help for Obama's recent extension of an olive branch toward the Muslim world. On the other hand, a truth well illustrated by the Bush gang is that a regime which lacks the support of the people doesn't carry much weight with the rest of the world. Thanks in large part to the Bush gang, conservatism and, by association, the Republican Party are suddenly and seriously out of favor in U.S. politics. One measure of the slippage is how the extreme elements of that political society talk and behave. The radio ranters on the right have stepped up their rhetoric, and the real wingnuts of the right are slipping toward desperate acts, as in the octogenarian shooter in the Holocaust Museum and the assassination of the abortion doctor. Both killers were shooting from an ideology founded in religion, just as fanatical as any real or imagined jihad. California enjoys and sometimes revels in a reputation for leading the way in social and cultural evolution, and in these times of rampant financial ruin, it seems fitting that California appears to be at the head of the breadline. Nearly every day brings new threats of slashed services and jobs eliminated. Whenever the government outgo gets too far ahead of the income, the keepers of the public money look first to close the gap at the expense of the things people want most from government. Libraries, schools, health care, police and fire protection, fixing the potholes and just keeping the beggars off the streets are the things we can't afford anymore. Here's the upside. After all those things are crippled, we might get a clear picture of what's left. What are the things government still can afford after it can't afford the things people actually want? Democracy works a lot better with a well-informed electorate, but that concept falls apart in the thousands of pages of fine print we call the budget. The budget is not a democratic process. It's a street fight. Every man for himself, the biggest, strongest, and meanest always win. The only budget analyses available and accessible to the average voter are provided by people who are in the fight for whatever language sends money in the direction of their personal cause. There's no such thing as impartiality in a street fight, so here's a modest proposal. We need a public auditor slash advocate on the state budget, someone with no power to directly influence the budget, and someone barred from accepting any campaign contributions. Every time the politicians threatened to slash a popular government service, the public auditor would look down from above the fray and tell us what less popular, less visible government services were spared the red pencil. It still won't be possible for the average voter to understand every page of the budget, but at the very least we should be able to get the Reader's Digest condensed version. And as long as we're dreaming about a more democratic government, we might as well take the next step and take the campaign contributions away from everyone who holds public office. The Public Utilities Commission isn't exactly famous for taking the word public in its title seriously, but sometimes you can read between the lines. The PUC published some numbers comparing the reliability of the three really big public utilities in California in 2008. To the surprise of no one here in the foothills, PG&E gives its customers a lot more blackouts than the two Southern California companies, and the average PG&E blackout is more than four times as long. PG&E blames the weather, and that's for sure. If the wind didn't blow, the power wouldn't fail. I guess no one thought of that before. That's Local Views for this week. This is Mark Stannert reminding you this commentary doesn't necessarily hold back the wind. For KVMR, its management, staff, or contributors, email mark@caloki.com.